Jonathan, hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Web hosting for everyone.
Hello, all. Welcome to this week's episode of Bagel Tech Photo. We are back again. We got more news this week, which is fantastic because we didn't know if we'd have some this week, being the fact that it basically, as we said, had diarrhea of cameras last week. We won't say the other word. We're trying to save you in a little bit of editing.
Oh, don't do that now. First with video, mate. Oh, blimey.
No, I would not do that to you now. First time I ever cursed on a podcast was last week, though, but I just could not help myself. So I apologize for that.
No,
you had
bad.
To bleep me. Once
it was bad. So.
we're one short this week. G-Man is being a family man. Alex G. Fox is out with the family, so hopefully he's having a good time. Said he might pop in, but if I was him, I'd stay out with the family, to be honest. So it's just our regular two this week. We are slightly unplugged, as they would say. We'll start off with he's become part of the show, really. Chris Forsman from Ars Technica. Chris, how's your week been?
It's been pretty good. Pretty good. The weather's been a little hot here, a little steamy. But I think it's going to cool off this weekend a little bit.
Oprah Steamy Town, Chicago. Chris ain't going to comment on that because he lives in that city, and God knows Oprah will find you. She has ways. She did vote for Obama, but we won't turn this political.
Well, I heard that Hurricane Irene was only marginally away from being the same size as Oprah.
Oh, we know. I'm not even going to say your name, man, because people will find you then.
Moving along.
Yeah, but the thing is, the size that woman is, I'm going to see her coming from a ways off.
Well, right now she's between a Category 3 or a Category 4. We won't go to Category 5. She hasn't been Category 5 for years.
Oh, dear.
God bless her. Mr. Ewan Rankin, how are you?
I'm all right, mate. Not bad. I've had end of quiet August. I've done bugger all hardly, so.
But you
I'm ready for work to pick back up, please.
You worked your butt off on Friday or Thursday, though.
I worked a lot yesterday.
4:30 a.m.
Yeah, I was. Tough time.
How many shots do you think you actually took yesterday?
I haven't got a clue. I haven't even processed them yet. A couple hundred.
So now Thursday's turned into a weekend thing.
A lot of hanging around yesterday, though. Lots of hanging around.
Yeah, you tell me that sometimes. And that's sometimes I think both of you probably could contest to that photographers, a lot of time, it is a lot of waiting around, waiting on other people.
Mm. Very much so.
Mm. Ooh, I love to shoot weddings.
You love to shoot things? Oh, hopefully with a camera, right?
Weddings.
Weddings, yeah.
Weddings. I thought you said things. Love to shoot things.
You've got to be bossy at weddings. You've got to say to them, come on, stand here right now. Stop stalking. Get over here.
Yeah.
Either that or you've got to go shoot.
Because everyone's drunk. Everyone's drunk.
The
after
stuff.
No one's where they're supposed to be.
Oh, the life of a photographer.
Yeah. It's a treat.
Let's get into this week's news because we do actually still have some. It's a bit carryover, but some of it is actually as new. And something that you pointed out, Ewan, which I'm just actually starting to take a look at now, is this JPEG Mini. Which magically makes your JPEGs up to 5 times smaller without sacrificing quality. Now, I've always thought that if you go smaller, you don't really have to worry about the quality. It's if you go bigger, you have to worry about the quality. So how is this actually beneficial?
Well, I think what they're saying is that they can get the compression in file size without getting the compression in physical size, no?
Well, okay, go ahead, Chris. Sorry.
Sure. Now, what they're saying is because JPEG is a progressively, it's a progressive compression and it can compress it more and more. Mm. But the downside is that it starts to introduce artifacts into the image. What this JPEG Mini process does is it does some analysis of the content of the image, and then selectively applies the compression to maximize the compression amount and minimize the artifacts.
I think
so.
For a given quality of image, you can actually make a smaller file size.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I was about to say. It's actually reducing the file size, but not the the image size itself.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what they're talking about is maintaining quality with image physical printout size would be similar, but your total file size would be less and taking up less hard drive space. But with all of these things, you've got to bear in mind that if you're doing this to your original, don't always keep your original anyway. So my golden rule is never alter an original, always alter versions. So this would be great if you were doing duplications of shots to push out and then you wanted to just store them for longevity as a file copy or backup copy. I also struggle a little bit to think with what this is doing that Photoshop isn't, because if you look at the quality save settings on Photoshop, they're actually extremely good at maintaining a physical size but reducing file size and maintaining quality as well as. You get a few artifacts, but it's nothing horrific. It is genuinely pretty good. If you're paying for this, then I wouldn't pay for it if you've got Photoshop, is my thought process, but I don't know what Chris thinks.
That's actually what I was trying to look at. I mean, if it is... if it's a free program or not, by the looks of it. It says try it now. So anything you ever see, try it now. Which, by the way, if anybody's listening, is at jpegmini.com. There's a thing over there for it. Correct me if I'm wrong, Chris. This is MP3 for photos.
I mean, that's what JPEG is. Yeah.
I mean, JPEG stands for Joint Photographic Engineering Group or something, doesn't it? It's not... the progressive bit, progressive JPEGs is a style of JPEG which came after JPEG.
Okay, well, what I'm saying though is that the actual program though is like, it's like you take a piece of audio, you've got to say it's MP3 or whatever it is, but you want to retain the quality as much as possible, but shrink the file size. It's a compression ratio. Maybe I should actually compare it to FLAC, because FLAC actually sounds just as good as CD. But mm-hmm. It doesn't sacrifice the quality, so I'll say that again.
I think I can probably explain this using your analogy. FLAC is a lossless compression system. It doesn't lose any quality at all. So it's sort of like a zip file. When you zip a file, it just looks for redundant data and stores it as a series of patterns instead of storing each individual one and zero. So it doesn't change anything in the file whatsoever. When you unzip it, you get the exact same bits as we started with.
So that would be TIFF.
Well, no, because TIFF isn't compressed.
TIFF is lossless compression.
I think you can use compression in TIFF, but it basically uses the zip algorithm in it. It's a variation of the same algorithm. But yeah, it's a lossless compression. Whereas MP3, you lose some quality when you compress it down with MP3. What it does is it looks at how humans can hear sounds and says, okay, for this amount of compression, I can toss out this bit of information that humans probably won't be able to hear anyway. And that's the same thing that JPEG does. Is it tries to throw out information in a smart way that, you know, people probably won't notice. Now, the difference between the JPEG Mini and the standard JPEG compression algorithms is that it attempts to do an analysis of the actual image content, like this is a mountain, this is a sky, etc., mm-hmm. and selectively apply the compression to give an even smaller file size with the same amount of quality that you would get, you know. So the example they talk about here is that you started out with a 1,000 pixel image, which isn't that big, but it's, you know, covers a good chunk of your screen, maybe.
Oh yeah.
Set it to the highest JPEG compression in Photoshop, which is 12. And Photoshop crunched it down to 654K, and the JPEG Mini version, which has the exact same quality, was actually crunched down to 158K. So it's like a, you know, a 5x difference in size.
Now, which is
now, what's going to
say, which is quite Yeah, go ahead.
Where that's really important isn't like Ewan said, you know, this isn't what you want to store permanently for your archives. It's, you know, if you're going to email it out to somebody, or you're going to maybe like upload it to a service, upload it to something like Flickr even, if it's going to be embedded in a web page where, you know, people might be downloading it off their home broadband, or some people might still be on dial-up, or they might be downloading it with a 3G phone. You know, every little bit that you can save makes web pages, for instance, load faster. So,
but that's exactly what I was going to say. I see it as that, as for, you know, for websites and all this stuff to render things faster, and for the mobile phone market. I mean, let's face it, we're playing huge amounts in data on mobile phones now. I can see the benefit of that. So, Ewan, I'm sorry, you it sounded like you were going to chime in there.
No, I mean, the only thing that I'm going to say is that I'll go back to how you actually go about paying for this. If it's a free service, I'm still trying desperately to find out how it is, but it's got to try it now. So that makes me think there's going to be a fee for this to be done. If you look at the compression that goes on in Photoshop when you try and reduce your quality settings but maintain your file size, they're extremely good. I wouldn't pay for anything over and above that. And if you want to go any smaller than that, you can repeat process, or you can go through Preview. And Preview does a very good job in Mac of reducing file size without losing too much on the quality. I'll grant you that the thing with this is you look at the sliders that they've got where you pull them across the image and they give you original versus mini JPEG. And it does look very, very, very good. It's lossless, but you've got to bear in mind, you're not looking at some of the 100% there. You're looking at a web graphic, and it's not big to start with in the first place anyway. I mean, the idea that they've given you a trial, thumbs up, because certainly for an application like this, try it before you buy, no question.
Yeah, go ahead and top us off there, Chris. I obviously, Ewan is like, you're on the fence with it, so. But yeah. Nothing you don't see in Photoshop. But Chris, have you tried this, Chris?
Yeah, I played around with it a little bit. I think I agree with you in that it's just not, it's not going to be a tool for photographers that are doing any sort of high-end work as far as large print sizes or you know, magazine work or commercial work, anything like that. This is definitely a tool for that's, I think the main benefits are going to be online. And I also think it would be, you know, useful for someone who's maybe going to upload some pics to, like, you know, Snapfish or one of these services where you can get 4x6 prints done. You know, you upload them and, you know, to your local Walgreens. We have a lot of Walgreens here in Chicago. So if you're going to do something like that, I think it's just beneficial if you've got a lot of photos to do and you're talking about upload time and maybe you don't have the best internet connection in particular.
I've got to say, I just thought that one of the better applications here maybe PDF. So if you're making a PDF, if you're making a document up and you want to slide in high quality graphics and get a PDF output, which is low file size, but with maintaining quality, you may achieve this with this, because that's traditionally the area where photography really suffers, is pumping out to PDF. So this that could be really good in the PDF line as a final output.
That's a possibility.
Yeah.
I think it'd be great as an app. This thing actually is an app where you could actually do something. You know, I kind of agree with Chris, where I see it aimed more of at a mobile market and faster load times. It would be great if it was like an app on the phone where you could import the picture, downsize it, and then send it back out to Flickr or the web or these kind of things. So It looks interesting. Try it now. At least it's you can sign. They have a little sign up over there, so we're not guaranteeing that you guys are not going to get junk mail or any of these kind of things. So kind of try it at your own risk. But it's jpegmini.com. It does. It looks like an interesting product, shall we say. Let's move on now. I guess we're going to talk about the Panasonic, the rumors at least of it. There's this new twin lens 3D digital camera with 3D HD video capability. Now, I'm guessing that this is this still in the rumor mill, Chris, or is this
a prototype? They're in, I think it's in Berlin. They have the IFA show, which is a big kind of consumer electronics show, similar to CES here in the States. Mm. And Panasonic they have a prototype now. There's no guarantee this will be an actual product, but if they're already trying to experiment with a prototype, there's chances are they're looking to put this into future products.
Mm.
But it looks pretty good.
Carl, your audio's disappeared, mate.
Well, it should be here.
No, there we go. You're back now.
Okay. Anyway, well, that's my crappy internet connection, which would be JPEG Mini would be grateful for. But no, I heard you chime in there, Ewan. What's the hmm?
Well, I think the thing is that you've got 3D videos going up on YouTube now an awful lot more. You've got Samsung announcing 3D integration for YouTube for their televisions. The capture market's got to go up in line with it. I don't know many people who like 3D, though. That seems to be the trouble. You know, a lot of people I talk to in my peer group say no 3D, whether that's just because, you know, birds of a feather flock together and I'm not that enamored with 3D, I don't know. But if you're talking about there is going to be an increase in the 3D market is growing, there has to be a capture quality that goes along with it. And if Lumix are doing it with the sensors that they've got, I think they'll probably do quite a decent job with it. It's light on spec and it's light on price in the story, but that's going to be the key overriding factor as to whether it's a success or not. And that's where 3D's typically failed.
Chris, what's your take on 3D? We've never got to ask you how you feel about 3D.
I think it's fun. I'm not really sure where it's going to end up. You know, if it's going to be a ubiquitous technology or not. You know, there have been attempts to do this thing in the past, and it hasn't really gone, you know, much outside of a sort of, like I said, a fun. I mean, you know, like a ViewMasters and I remember 3D photography. You know, taking two separate pictures, and they had these little metal viewers you can get, and you put a picture in the end and you hold it up to your face. It's even far back as like the late 1800s, they had these things. And you know, I like 3D pictures. I think they're really cool to look at, and I just don't know, you know, if there's the whole technology's there to make it ubiquitous, and I don't know if it really works for everyone or not. But I think this camera has a lot of interesting ideas they're trying out. Like, for instance, you can set one camera. It can shoot 3D video and it can shoot 3D stills, but you can also set one lens to shoot a 2D video, and the other lens can then shoot stills as you're shooting video. Which I think is an interesting.
That's very good.
Way you know to take advantage of the twin lens.
I think the other interesting thing that's coming out from this, I mean, the chat room, I've just done a quick straw poll on chat room, and the predominance is 3D is thumbs down, no good at all. But Russ in the chat room saying, bring on 4K, you know, where's the technology development that's taking us away from 3D that most people don't want and putting it into higher quality output, which most people do want. People want to capture at 4K. People want to pump out at 4K. People don't want 3D, generally speaking. 3D movie sales seem to be going down. I've just done a Google on that, and they're in a declining box office tally is on the way down for receipts.
Well, don't you think Chris summed it up, though? It's fun. You go to the theater, it's fun. And anybody that's listened to any of the Bagel Tech shows knows my opinion on it. I don't want to sit on a couch and look like an idiot with glasses on. It's just, it's not my idea of a family evening in. And then not only that, you talk about family, and then you're sitting there going, well, I'm sorry, little Dave and little Sally. We didn't have enough money to get you glasses, so you kids are screwed. It's, I feel it's still a gimmick. But the thing about with seeing Panasonic do this with Lumix, more of a commercial friendly brand, that is, if I can talk right. Obviously, are we getting to the point, and I've talked about this with you too, Ewan, are we getting to a point now where they're wanting to shove it down our throats, where the film studios, now maybe even the camera companies, want to shove this technology down our throat? You're seeing it on almost every single TV out there nowadays, be it, you know, LED, LCD. It's everywhere.
I mean, there was an interesting stat last week that I read out on the Daily Show where it was saying that 3D TV sales are up, and the counterpoint to that was, well, how many TVs that are currently on sale that are brand new lines aren't 3D compatible? It's the standard process. If people are going to buy at the cutting edge and buy the highest quality they possibly can, if the TV is 3D enabled, then that may be something that separates it between it and the 2D. People think, well, I might as well get the 3D because it's out. But in terms of usage and the benefit to the individual, it's a novelty. It'll be in the metaphoric cupboard within a week. People have stopped using it once they've had a play with it. I mean, I've watched 3D TV, and it, you know, it looks very nice. I watched some of the coverage of the Winter Olympics in 3D from the BBC, and it was immersive coverage. You know, the skaters on it were, you could see this nice depth of field, and they were separated from the rest of the surroundings. It looked very, very good, but at the end of it, you know, would I have noticed after an hour? Probably not. I'd have switched off from it. I'd just be watching normal television. It's like HD and standard definition. I've got HD, but if I flick over to a channel that's only standard definition, I don't even notice.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I know it's different, and I can analyze it. I can look at it, and I can go, oh, that's different from that. But when I just go, right, okay, I finished watching Discovery HD, I'm going to go and watch BBC One on the standard channel. When I go to BBC One on the standard channel and it's back to SD, I never notice. I don't think, oh, that's SD now. That looks awful.
I do. It's TV. I notice.
I do. I'm in Chris's boat here. I do. I mean, if you were going to give me Discovery HD and then we have the exact same channel in SD, I'm like, holy crap. I HD for me personally has been one of these things where I want more of it. I crave more of it. And I see a difference. Where the 3D bit has always been the gimmick part for me. Oh, it's a nice little add-on. Oh, I may use it once. I may use it twice. But that surprises me. I never thought I'd hear that thing out of you, that you don't notice much difference.
I'm not bothered to notice. I can tell the difference, but I'm not bothered to worry about the notice. I don't care. Okay. It's just TV's TV, you know? I watch it, I go.
That sounds better to me because you, as a photographer, that was worrying me for
a second. No, I like how it looks. I like it looks nice, but I don't crave it. And if I switch between two channels, you know, I don't even consciously bother to recognize the fact that one's 3D, one's HD, and one's not. I think the final word in the chat room goes to X-Men. You know, they've been trying to push it down our neck since the 50s. When are they going to get? We don't want it. It's no good.
Hollywood's never going to get it.
No.
Because, by God, they want it for copyright and copy.
Yeah, it stops you filming protection. It in the theater.
Mm-hmm. Sorry.
That's it.
Until these, you know, we film it and then you can watch it back in pirated form in 3D. The pirates are always find a way around it. Just stop shoving it down our throats. You feel that way, Chris?
No, I really don't feel like it's being shoved down our throats. I mean, I've never been to a movie that you couldn't see in 2D if you didn't, you know, if you wanted to. I've never seen a TV broadcast that couldn't be viewed in 2D if you didn't want to. So I feel like it's an area where some, you know, manufacturers are obviously experimenting, and you know, it, like I said, there are enough people that find it interesting that they want to find a way to address the people who find it interesting, and I think that there's, you know,
there's a market for it.
He's frozen. That's not me.
Yeah, that's 2D, unfortunately, so that's not helping our argument.
Yeah, we're all about quality here at Bagel Tech. Mm.
That's right. That's right. Well, why Chris figures out if he's 2D, 3D, or no D right now, we'll move on to the Makiyama. It's an iPad 2 mount is what it is. I would assume this works with the iPad 1, but I'm not 100% sure because it looks like it just sits in there. But you film a movie on this thing. Now, you have iPad 1.
Yeah.
Which just doesn't have the camera on the back, obviously. But we've heard crap and crap again about the camera on the iPad 2 is nothing spectacular, that the iPhone 4 camera blows it away. But I have to say, this looks...
Hang on a sec.
This looks interesting. There's Chris.
He's back in and... Hello, mate. He's in. Yeah, sorry, no, the interesting thing is that I'm trying desperately to find another picture of it because the story that we've got here at the moment that we're looking at on Ars Technica is, on unofficial Apple weblog, is this this little thing. You know, they don't sew the bottom of it, but underneath the picture that you can see on unofficial Apple weblog, there is a ball head mount that's exactly like a photography ball head mount. So, there's no, you know, you've got your adjustable arms and that kind of stuff. You could stick your elastic bands on and turn it around like the, you know, the old smooth scrolling stuff. this thing looks really, really nice. And even if you wanted to shoot stills with your 5 megapixel, or if it comes, according to the rumors, 8 megapixel camera or iPhone, then it, you know, this would do it. And I thought it was nice as well. If you had something where you wanted to present an iPad as an interactive device and you have it set next to your desk, you know, you could use this as a stand as well.
Actually, yeah.
The only thing that really bothered me about the whole story was no price.
What do you mean no price?
I couldn't find a price.
Oh, no, Rankin. It'll be available in October for $69.95.
Okay, so that's a bit price. That's not bad, actually.
If it's just the whole lens is coming off thing again for you this week.
Yeah, sorry, mate. I didn't know the story I'm looking at. Oh, now I've got it. Okay. I'm dyslexic. I get dispensation.
I understand. I actually have the same problem.
You're not dyslexic.
I don't know if I'm dyslexic or
I've
not. I've got
a certificate.
Oh, do you?
I'm certified.
I'm a certified dyslexic.
Is it hanging on the wall of your office?
I took a test and failed. Yeah. What did you do?
I was too dumb to take the test.
I couldn't even fail. No, I mean, if that comes with the ball head mount and everything and it fits on your existing tripod, if it's got a tripod attached to it, then I like it. I think it's £69. It's not bad. Not bad. It's a bit pricey, not the end of the world.
$70. Yeah, I don't think it's bad. What's your take on this, Chris? That you've chimed back in after frozen. See, the 3D gods didn't want you to speak anymore.
Oh, darn 3D. Are you talking about the iPhone mount or the iPad one?
The iPad, the Makiyama. For iPad 2. They say it's for iPad 2, but your thoughts. Have you got an iPad 2?
I do.
You like the camera? Never... You like the camera on it?
No. It's a turd.
Okay.
It's a turd.
That's what we keep hearing. So are we looking at this from a mount point of view or for really making a movie on the iPad kind of thing?
I think it's silly, personally. Because the camera's such I mean...
And we've got editing this weekend. And not only that, I've got to edit video as well. Thank you, Forsman.
Okay, let me back up. I mean, that camera is crap. Just...
The camera's awful, I grant you.
Yeah, it's... I'm trying to think of an analogy. It's like sticking a big block V8 into a... I don't know, an old Ford Fiesta. There's just not a lot of sense in it, I feel like.
Okay, but how do you feel
the camera's
about
not
the
that
mount?
Great. You know, editing an iMovie is fun and actually doable on the iPad. But you have this whole mount to put on a nice microphone. It just
I
feel like it'd be money better spent on a better camera, frankly.
$70 is spent elsewhere for you.
Yeah. For me.
So Ewan likes it now that he knows the price. Chris hates it because the camera is beep, if you guys caught that.
I
earlier.
Did justify the fact that I said you could use it as a stand as well, which was nice. Mm-hmm. You know,
that's so true.
You could present it up nicely and there's other things to do with it. I wouldn't buy it purely as a mount on its own, but there's other things to go with it. And I think as well also, if you look at the longevity of Apple products, you know, the way it mounts seems to suggest that iPad 2 and iPad 1 would probably fit it, even if you had to do a little kind of minor adjustment. There's no suggestion that iPad 3 wouldn't. And if you've got a leap forward in technology there, then that makes it very much more worthwhile as a long-term investment.
Yeah, I'd definitely say if a next-generation iPad comes around with a camera that's better. I mean, it can record 720p, but it's fixed focus, fixed aperture. You know, you don't have a lot of control over any of it. Whereas on the iPhone, the camera itself is just more capable in it. I've seen some pretty nice footage shot with an iPhone. So, you know, small as it is, I think a mount like that kind of makes a little more sense for an iPhone versus an iPad.
Yeah.
Sorry. No, I was just going to go into the other story. You want to make one last point about the Makiyama?
No, you go ahead.
Okay. I was going to say, because we're talking about the iPhone and I agree. The HD recording on the iPhone 4, excellent. Even great pictures, too. And Fostex actually turned out with something this week. The AR 4i it turns it into a handheld stereo HD video, basically, as they're saying, a powerhouse. You attach this thing to the iPhone. It shoots in stereo HD video. The price, $150. Fostex is, you know, they're known for multi-track recording equipment and these kind of things. But this, I would buy. Mm-hmm. This looks cool.
Yeah.
It does. I mean, I think the thing with this is it's got the only thing I would have said would have been nice was if you wanted to shoot video, I'd rather shoot guiding the motion of the camera using two hands than one hand. The trouble you've got with extending your arm and then starting to track is that the tracking becomes very vertical as opposed to just purely lateral, whereas because you've got two hands on something, you track laterally far more easily without vertical shutter. I would have liked to have seen an option to hold with two hands, but it's a long way forward. It's got the integrated microphones, which, you know, if they're good quality, that could be a real bonus. I quite like it. Again, I'm looking for the price.
It's $149.99. You will find it in the first paragraph.
Holy hell, that's a piece. That's a piece of crap. Don't buy it.
Well, now, to be fair, it comes with stereo microphones built in.
That's right. It looks like rabbit ears.
Yeah.
Question in the chat room from James. Have they ripped off Disney's Pluto? As in ripped off his ears?
It kind of looks like it a little.
Chris, you have something you might like,
the grip comes off and you can just connect it to a tripod, or you can maybe even connect like they make those little handheld Steadicam mounts.
Be nice if it came off and you could stick it right on the Makiyama tripod. Then you can hold it with two hands, Ewan.
Yeah, I mean, I think iPod's a bit too useless as a camera to then have the ability to shoot well on video. I think it's too big. But I think the iPhone's got a real opportunity, especially with the add-ons that you can get because of its small form factor to start with, of really making a huge, huge difference. And if they can really improve the cameras and sensors on it, then it stands to reason that the iPhone 4 or 5 has got a significant opportunity to make an inroad into the compact camera market.
Agreed. I think we are seeing, we've already had rumors about Sony's getting involved with doing the sensor bit for the next iPhone, possibly 8 megapixels we're hearing. This would be a wonderful addition. I mean, honestly, I really like it. For $150, I agree with you. Get it on sale, Walmart Blue Light Special, $79 maybe. Then I think they've got a hit.
Could be.
And Chris laughs.
I just find it every interesting that I hear that a lot.
Nothing's a success till it hits Walmart.
Right. Like, it'd be great as long as it's about half the price or...
And then Walmart.
Wait, so it's on sale at Walmart.
Or Target. Right.
Once it hits the bargain bin, then you know you got a deal. But isn't the Blue Light Special actually start with Kmart?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah, I don't know how it made it over to Walmart. Of course, Walmart bought everything up.
Oh, why? What have they done?
What do you mean? I what?
I just went to do something and it's gone horribly wrong.
That's your dyslexia kicking in. Get the certificate out. Show everybody.
No. Wouldn't drink.
We're on video now. Okay. Shall we get back into actual real things like the X10 Fujifilm that I know if Alex was here would just be, oh my God, Fujifilm. He loves Fuji. It's a nice camera though.
Yeah.
This is a nice camera. And it looks... It looks like a camera, and this is coming from a guy that doesn't really know anything about cameras, but it looks like a camera. It looks like it's rugged. It looks like, my God, this is what you would use if you were in the, you know, 1960s and you were, you know, the prime photographer of the most prestigious newspaper in New York, and by God, you'd have this camera. Is that what you feel, Chris?
It does look a bit like the old Leicas. I was going to say it kind of reminds me of my Rolly 35. I've got a Rolly 35 that looks very similar.
It reminds me very much of the cameras that you used to get out of crackers when you were a kid, that when you squirted them, it used to send water across the room. Yeah, you see, you know I'm right. Yeah. Now you're all coming down from your high horse about Rolly, and you're looking at it and thinking it's a piece of plastic crap.
No, it's magnesium alloy, my friend.
I was going to say, it's
that's magnesium alloy, my friend, and don't you forget it.
My God, you're 0 for 3 today. You can't find the prices, and by God, everything's made of plastic.
I don't think it looks cheap and nasty. I think it does look very nice. I think the key price on the key part of the, of all of these cameras in the compact ranges is all about how much they're going to cost to the end user. And that is the key part. And if you're looking to kind of come out and hump the market at $1,000, £1,000, most of these you can keep. Not because they're bad cameras. I'm not saying they're bad cameras, but there's an awful, you know, this is the bang for the buck argument. Again, what's the step from a really decent capture image at $250 up to one of these that captures maybe even slightly better, but it's $1,000. You know, you've got to justify that step and that $800 gap. And that's where I struggle with these. You know, this picture is better. I'm not saying it's not. Mm. Is it $800 better? No, definitely not.
Mm. So it's a price thing for you.
On these cameras, it is. You know, they're going back to this retro stuff. They're making them look nice. They're shooting great pictures. That's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is, if you're going to be that much more expensive than standard compacts at sort of the $300 to even $500 mark, you've got to be shooting an awful lot better than they currently are. And low light's not as good. They're no better or worse than some of them. Zooms. Okay, they're manageable zooms that you can hold via handheld, and some of the others are going really silly on the ranges. There's no onboard features that are particularly brilliant or great or different from anything else. They shoot in manual, but there's lots of cameras at $500 that shoot at manual. You know, these things have got to be doing something else for that price comparison, especially in the current market, because people shouldn't be that stupid to go out and buy a $1,000 camera when a camera at $500 does nothing worse or probably even equal to.
Well, now, what do you think about aperture range on that lens?
The aperture range is good. I mean, that's one of the points. You know, the 2.0 at the low end looks really, really nice. I've got a G, I think the G9 went down to 2.0, but I think, don't some of the Lumixes go to 2.0?
But it only goes out to, once you zoom all the way out, it's only 2.8. I mean, that's a pretty good aperture range.
That is.
But for a compact zoom.
Yeah, no, that is very, very good. But the thing then, you can go to 2.8, but if you're starting to think about what would you shoot with that, yeah, you'll get great depth of field close up, but if you're talking about using it to get speed to capture stuff that's fast moving, that's all to do with whether the shutter reacts fast enough, not so much the mm-hmm. f-stop.
Right.
And that's where they always fall down on compacts.
I would definitely say that I would consider this camera, you know, along with, like, say, the Coolpix P7100 we were looking at last week, and some of the Canon, you know, the Canon, like, G11. Mm-hmm.
I think he was saying G11 there and the G12. It's a similar kind of range. It's a similar kind of price. Then I agree. I think it's very competitive in the market. But if you're talking about it competing and being $1,000, keep it. I don't see that.
Did he freeze again?
He froze again. Yeah, I may have unfairly finished off his sentence there, though. That's.
But this is going to be one of these things where we're going to be switching stories. Actually, we're not going to be really switching stories. We're fixing to go into questions. We had to call this show today "Freeze Frame."
Freeze frame, yeah. Dropped call.
Drop call. Freeze frame. Well, one thing I will discuss with you, something that's making me kind of go about it, because we talk about optical zoom, zoom that is, and we talk about digital zoom.
Yeah,
there's Chris. No, welcome back to the. Well, oh, he's not.
He's okay, gone off again.
Oh, here he is. Yeah. Oh, he's back again. Chris. Well, anyways. We'll see if Chris will ever resurrect or not. Talking about optical zoom and talking about digital zoom, there's one thing that's, I'm not sure if it's rubbing me, actually it is rubbing me wrong about this thing. You got a 4x optical zoom on the thing, and then it's got an intelligent digital 2x telephoto zoom. Now, we've always heard that digital zoom is just
interpolation. Yeah. And it's guessing. Or it's Chris, just straightforwardly zooming. He's struggling.
Chris is struggling. So that's one thing on this camera. If it's costing, say, $1,000 and you've got an intelligent. There he is.
Check, check.
Yeah, he's in.
Hallelujah.
You're in, mate. Sorry. Go ahead, Carl. Say.
If you've got something that's saying it's intelligent, it's an intelligent digital zoom. I don't know if, first and foremost, I hate digital zoom. Secondly, I don't know if I want an intelligent digital zoom telling me what it thinks it should do. Now, to me, that's the shortcomings of this camera. Yeah, it looks great. Yeah, it looks like, you know, Humphrey Bogart could have actually used the damn thing. But that's one thing that I'm looking at, like, okay, 4x optical, but the digital side, and why is it there? Chris?
I don't know. I never use digital zoom. I just can't care one whit about it.
It sucks.
I think you get into a dangerous situation as well, though, where it's perfectly justifiable in my mind to do it, but you never give it a chance because of the fact it's always been done so badly. And every time someone comes out and says, oh, no, this is digital zoom done right, and you look at it, you go, no, actually, it's not. And I've not seen digital zoom done the way you would have expected that it should be done. But, I have to fight to not shut myself off to someone that comes along and says, we've got digital zoom right. But more often than not, you actually find that they haven't. And I'm not sure that this has done anything different then either, really. It's still the same problem.
I don't know. I don't think this camera has it, but I saw... maybe it was some of the cameras we saw last week, but one of them had this interesting digital teleconverter option, where what it did is it just used the central part of the sensor, and you got a lower resolution image, but it would just adjust the viewfinder and everything, so you were only looking at that, you know, central part of the sensor, and it gave it like a... It was as if you put on a teleconverter, but it didn't try to interpolate or any kind of tricks. It just simply
cropped
it just like it really does, but it only showed you that cropped area. So you didn't have to guess where it was, you know, when you were framing, you didn't have to guess anything.
I've been playing with iOS 5 and the camera on iOS 5 is not good because typically digital zoom will make a best guess or process the image to try and get a bit more out of it. What I've seen in the iPhone 5, the iPhone 4 on iOS 5.0 is that it just crops and nothing more. It doesn't seem to do anything to improve.
I thought you had an iPhone 5 there for
a second. No, mate, I just had an interrupting American.
Sorry. That's my dyslexia.
God damn it, you colonials are rude.
At least there's two of us on this show, so we can gain up on you, Brit.
That's true, actually. I'm outnumbered. I've had a play, and I reckon that I've cracked the iPhone mount there. Definitely.
Yeah,
no, Pluto. You're not watching the live feed, but there you go. It's on the video.
Oh, we'll have to watch it back then, yeah. If for some reason, Ustream is not being cooperative again, at least on my connection over here. So, well, I think all in all, we'd be... do you still want this camera now, Chris, that we've completely dogged it to death?
Oh, no, I'm fine with it.
It's a good camera. I haven't said that it's not a good camera. It's the price. The key is the price.
Yeah.
It's the price.
It's going to be expensive. It's going after a niche market. So, there's not going to be a million people buying it. There's going to be a couple thousand. So it's going to cost a little bit more. But for me, it definitely speaks to me as a photographer.
There's a definite point here in the chat room. James says the best way to zoom is stand up and get closer.
I agree.
And that's
with that.
Exactly he's true. Right. Yeah, zoom and makes you right. lazy. He's exactly right. Yeah,
yeah, it is right. Unless maybe you don't have the option. Like I don't know, maybe a rugby game is going on. You it may not be the best idea.
Yeah, but I think that's the thing is, you know, that's why
don't
I like
get closer to that.
Yeah. I like shooting with my 50mm lens because it's fixed, it's prime. I don't get so many problems with barreling and that kind of stuff. And I then just, you know, it makes me get up and walk around to frame my shots. And I take better pictures with it than I do with a 200mm lens and sit back and be a lazy git. He's right. He's absolutely right.
He is. If anybody's interested, the Fuji X10 is coming out in the autumn of this year. We're expecting a price anywhere from $1,000 to $1,000,000. So if it tickles your fancy, let it tickle you on Christmas Day. Shall we get into the questions, or you guys got some cool little tips this week? You have one?
No, I haven't thought of anything. I've been too busy this morning getting ready because we've had a big change. We've got video here now, so we're I've been setting all that up. And I've got to break it all down and set it back up again with it under the desk next time because at the moment it's just sat in a pile beside me.
So you literally built it and just stuck it there. It's like a kid.
Yep.
Yeah, I understand. Do the same thing. Chris, any tip this week? Or are we tipped out this week?
I think we're tipped out.
We're tipped out.
Don't be lazy. Get closer. That's my tip.
That's right. There's the tip. Yeah. Get off your butt and get in the action.
Too right.
Questions, guys. Let's get into them. From Kenny from Middlesbrough. Hi, guys. Love the show.
Middlesbrough.
Question about Middlesbrough. Sorry. See, that's my dyslexia. Good God almighty. This is from Kenny, by the way, just so if anybody's listening. Hey, guys. Hi, love Kenny. The show. Hi, Kenny. I have a question about exposure. First off, don't do it in public. I went out last weekend to shoot some of the local flowers and animals and hit a problem. I'm using a 28 through 300 millimeter Tamron lens and a landscape landscape shot. Tried to say that three times fast. I tried to shoot at F13 as Alex had said the other week for optimal DOF control. What's DOF mean? I've got a quick question. Okay, thank you. Unfortunately, the camera wouldn't take the picture until I bought the aperture to F7, and then the results weren't great and a little blurred. Any ideas? I have been over and over it in my head, but can't think of why it happened. It was bright and sunny, and the ISO was set to 100. Who wants to take this first? Ewan?
Well, I mean, if you're talking about 100 on a bright sunny day at F13, you'd still be talking probably about, I mean, absolute minimum, you'd be talking about 1/250th of a second. So I can't see why it wouldn't shoot. It could be a focus thing. So the autofocus has not registered the focus and it won't let it shoot because you've forced it to take autofocus. The only other thing I thought of was, have you got the camera on manual and not on aperture priority? In which case your exposure, you may have set your exposure time to 1/8000th and it couldn't get there, so it wouldn't let you shoot. That I can't think of any other reason.
Yeah.
Can you think of any other reason, Chris?
Part of the question is we don't know what camera he has, and the different cameras and the different automatic and manual modes, you know, they have like different ways that they work. My guess, even on a bright sunny day, if you have the lens zoomed out long enough and you're at F13, your shutter speed definitely could be slower than the camera might recommend in some of the automatic modes. And it might be set or might have a setting or might have a feature where if it's just too slow based on the focal length, that it won't take a picture. I know we're just speculating here because we don't know the camera and we don't know all the other.
Well, if it's a Tamron lens at 28 to 300, it's either a Canon, a Nikon, or a Sigma, isn't it?
No, they make it in all mounts. They make it in Pentax and Minolta / Sony. Yeah. So.
Well, Kenny, get Stan, Cartman, and Kyle together, and then we'll see if we can find out what your camera is. Then write us back, so maybe we'll be able to help you out a little bit better. So,
I think I'd just check first the obvious error, like, you know, not you haven't got the lens cap on, but check your autofocus is working and you're not priming it to override, so that you've got an ability to manual focus on it, and also then just check that you're not on full manual instead of aperture priority, because that would stop you.
One thing I didn't consider, I just thought of too, if you're doing a landscape shot at a wider angle and you have a lot of sky or something in the shot, then there's nothing for this autofocus system to latch onto. If you have a lot of sky in there and there's no, like, say there's no clouds, or you're shooting something that's just, there's just no detail. Maybe the autofocus system, like Ewan said, didn't lock on to anything, and then it won't take a picture in that case.
Mm-hmm. Try out those things, Kenny, and see if they help. If not, write us back, and maybe we can help you further. Next question, guys, comes from Doug from Jersey. Hey, Doug's from Jersey. How you doing, Doug? Thanks for listening to Bagel Tech Photo. Hi, guys. I'm not one to make well of others' misfortune, but last week I went out, and about here in North Jersey, I tried to take some pictures of the awesome clouds rolling in on the back of Hurricane Irene. In real life, they look great, but my photos didn't do them justice. Any tips for taking great skies and cloud formations if I ever get the chance? I think I'm supposed to say again. Yeah. Okay, thank you. At least I didn't screw that one up.
I would say, Doug, the chances are that you've just gone for letting the camera work on full auto as well. And also potentially, I would have thought if you're photographing a hurricane rolling in, you're not going to have a lot of problems with a bright sky. It's all going to be dark and it's going to be matched very closely to the land. So generally speaking, you should be able to get fairly good photos of this. The thing that you'll probably lose is that you'll get a poor separation. The thing that you'll get with these is that you'll probably get a poor separation between lights and darks, and that's just a levels check. I mean, I'd run it through Photoshop and check your levels and just make sure your lights are light and your darks are dark, and that'll give you a much better contrast ratio across the whole lot. That's probably what's more the reason. It's looking flat because you haven't got the starkness of contrast. Failing that, if you had shot these in RAW, that would give you a bit more flexibility. You could have got an almost pseudo highlights and shadows effect for HDR, or basically shoot an HDR image, because the classics in grand and sky separation, HDR really does do that well. And if you get a program that doesn't do it to the nth degree, so it looks unnatural, if you can get a natural kind of just separate the two slightly, you'll get a much better result.
Chris? Now that you've decided to, you really hate Skype, don't you?
It's giving me hassles. He's.
Sure,
but no. Part of the problem is just like Ewan said. When you look at the clouds, your eyes and your brain, like, automatically adjust for the contrast range. So as you look, as you look around the sky, you look around a scene, you look around a room, whatever, your eyes and your brain are automatically adjusting for the local contrast wherever you point your eyes, but your camera doesn't do that. So, it might look awesome to your eyes because your brain is just automatically doing some of this interpretation that you might otherwise do, like you said, in Photoshop or tweaking a RAW file or something. So, and that's why, sometimes when things look awesome and then you get the picture and you're like, I thought it looked awesomer than that. Mm.
I guess our eye is always going to look more awesome, right? Than a camera. That's just usually how it works. Or pro speaking, Ewan, you ever seen something in person and go, it's a great photo, but it's not how I seen it, or it's not how I imagined it in my mind?
No, I get the same problem as he's got there, in that I see images through my eyes and look at the way that they are, and sometimes struggle to turn them into a 2D image. It's a very special skill if you can do it. And I don't know anyone that on hand on heart says that they can honestly take the picture that they see and it comes out exactly as they saw it, because your eye does so much more to enhance what you see. Low light, highlights, dumbing down, and neutral density filters will take out some of the problem of blowout and those kind of stuff. But when it comes down to it, it's really difficult to capture what you see in front of you, especially when you've got strong light sources and high degrees of contrast. I think that he's probably, from what he's written there, I would say the first thing he's got to do is just pass it through an image editing application and just look at the levels, because you'll probably find that your highs and lows there are going to be off the scale. So draw those back in and you'll get the contrast back in the image, and it'll probably improve it more than enough. Or even do an auto levels check or something like that. And, for the sake of 50 quid in elements, it's well worth the money.
Mm-hmm. if you've got a newer camera, some of the newer cameras too also have a built-in HDR function that'll just snap several exposures in a row and will blend them automatically to give you a wider contrast range. So see if you've got an HDR function on your camera that can help.
I mean, if you can do it post-processing, it's better. If you can just get it to bracket images and then post-process, because once you've taken it in that HDR in-camera stuff, it's always going to be in there. But if you're just trying to capture the moment, if it doesn't capture it, beauty of digital, just keep going.
Mm-hmm. Can attest to that. I mean, I agree. It seems like I always the iPhone 4, you know, my main camera, HDR, I end up almost always taking the other picture over the ADR or HDR.
HDR in Photoshop is very patchy. In iPhone, rather, is very patchy. There's times it does quite well, but more often than not, especially in low lights, it really does a bad job.
Yeah, I agree.
It's not good. It was better before. In iPhone 5, it doesn't get any better. In iOS 5, it doesn't get any better, trust me. It's worse.
That's too bad.
That's not good to hear. Mm. Yeah, that is. That's bad to hear. Last question, guys, comes from Ron. He says, hello, fellas. I need some advice. My camera has started placing a blue line at the top of pictures, and it means I have to crop them to get them to look normal. It's like a blue gel has been placed over the picture, and it runs from left to right at an angle. What should I do? Why does this sound like a hardware problem?
It is. Sensor's going bad.
Okay.
It's terminal.
So get a new camera. So get a new camera or new sensors. Is that your advice, Chris?
If it's under warranty, get it repaired. If it's not, buy a new one. Yeah.
What he said.
Yeah. That's what I mean. If someone came into the camera shop and I worked there, that's exactly what I tell them.
Of supportive answers. That's the glass of whiskey and pearl hand revolver, isn't it? I mean, it's...
Oh, no, come on.
Nah, dude, you're screwed. There's only death left.
Camera? Hopefully, Ron.
Not for him, for the camera.
I would say, Ron, that I agree with Chris. I think you've probably got a sensor death there. It's probably going to get bigger and bigger. I'd track whether it gets any bigger or not. If you're happy just cropping, then yeah, fine, carry on cropping. And if you haven't got the money to buy a new camera, like Chris says, if it's warranty, for God's sake, get it in as fast as you can before that warranty expires. It's not going to be light getting in the body, I don't think, if it's got a definitive colour. Am I right? I would say that you get a light strip if it was light getting in the body, but if it's a definitive colour, it's damaged that. The other thing I thought about was if you tried to clean the sensor, if it's an SLR and you've wiped it and you've left a mark across it. But again, I don't think that would be a colour. That would just be an artifacts kind of look to it. I think the colour's definitely, the sensor's dead. Dying.
Sorry, Ron. Oh, but hey, Ron, there's a bright side to it. If it is not under warranty, you can always keep it. And as the sensor gets worse and worse and worse, you'll just have a great photo effect.
Yeah, take the whole thing blue. Photography services.
That's right. There's always something.
Do you feel blue? Well, we shoot blue.
I think the bright side here is now he has a legitimate concern to maybe take to a significant other and say, honey, we've got to buy a new camera. Sorry.
Yeah.
Time to go camera perfect shopping. Time.
Chris says. Yeah, time.
The guys from Bageltech said, we need a new camera, honey.
No, don't you spread the blame. You started this. Yeah. You said he had to get a new camera. I never said that. I said, keep cropping. Yeah. I know what it's like to have an aggressive wife.
I said, go blue. So it's on you, Chris.
Oh, you guys. Such a treat.
That'll do it for our questions this week. That's going to do it for our questions this week. If you got a question, if you're feeling blue, you're feeling down, and your sensor needs replaced, then call us here or email us here, bageltechphoto with an F, FOTO, bageltechphoto@gmail.com. We will try our best each and every week to give you a solution to your problem other than just saying, get a new camera.
Buy a new camera.
That is the easiest solution usually. But as you can see, we will try our best to get into detail with all of your guys' questions. Send them in. We will get to them. We've got a lot to go through, but we will eventually get to yours, bageltechphoto@gmail.com. We got to thank the people that make this entire thing possible, the entire network possible, UK2.net. Head on over to bageltechnews.com. You're going to see their little emblem over there, UK2.net. Click on that. Going to take you to UK2.net, their website, VPS hosting over there, dedicated servers, domain names, you name it, they got it. And because they're really helping out the Bagel Tech Network by keeping us afloat, by keeping us alive, we're going to do something for you. We have two codes, correct? Still?
Yes. Doing?
Two codes.
Yeah.
Want to make sure. We got the code Bagel Tech, gets you 50% off your entire order when you go to check out for whatever you buy, 15% off your entire order. And we've also got the Bagel Tech DNS code. And I'll let you explain that a little bit more.
Bagel DNS is the code.
Oh, Bagel DNS. Sorry.
Bagel DNS is the code. If you're transferring your domain in and you want them to start hosting it, there's a DNS management charge that goes along with transfers. Bagel Tech listeners don't pay for that. So all you've got to do is enter in Bagel Tech DNS as your offer code instead of Bagel Tech, and you'll get the DNS charge removed completely from your transfer.
Just out of curiosity, can they use both codes?
I haven't tried. Give it a go.
Give it a go. Let us know.
Put the code in and do an update and see if you can put the code in again.
That'd be sweet. Mm. So as you can see, we got you covered. UK2.net's got you covered. Please, though, use bageltechnews.com to click through to go over there to have a look around. That way they know that we are definitely sending you, and they keep supporting the Bagel Tech Network.
Russ in the chat room says he's done it. Yes, you can. So you put in your offer code and your DNS code, and it'll take 15% off, and it'll take the DNS management chart off. There you go.
We do. Thanks for that, Russ.
Cheers.
Russ is our guinea pig on the Bagel Tech Network. He does our audio and apparently trying out codes all day long. Thank you, Russ. So you can do it.
I'm not sure this is an endorsement, but James in the chat room says, well, that's cool. If I had a website, I'd be with UK too.
That sounds very resounding.
It's if I had something, I'd buy that.
Well, see, he's happy. He's just happy.
Exactly. No, it's fine.
And we want to make you happy too. You guys like shirts, you like apparel, you like mugs. You want to support Bagel Tech in another way? Bageltech.spreadshirt.co.uk is the destination. Go over there. We got everything. I'm looking at some new ones that are up here. Show me your eye thingy. We'll let that stand as is. It's part of the Max show. I'm a big boy. Ewan's wearing the perfect one right now, which I absolutely love. I have a long lens. Great shirt. And these are the shirts from all the shows, the photo show, the big show, and the Mac show. We got the mugs. We got the shirts. We got them for men and for the gals over there. And shipping worldwide, even to the Philippines.
Mm.
Imagine that. All over now, the place.
Do we have the toddler onesies yet?
I can do toddler ones, and I can also do custom slogans as well. So if you've got something you particularly want to say, like Bagel Tech Photo Sucks, I can manufacture that shirt for you, and you can buy it. Go ahead. I had a couple of people write to me this week and say just that.
Oh, that's comforting.
I've ignored really them. Comforting. You'll be proud to know.
Oh, thank you.
Don't enter into a conflict. Just ignore them.
Much appreciated. It's nice of you to hold your tongue, Ewan. I know that's very hard for you to do.
Yeah, for those of you who are thinking and writing in and complaining, it's entertainment.
Yes, it's supposed to be. We're here to entertain you, and it's free!
Yeah, you cheapskates.
It's free. Bageltech.spreadshirt.co.uk. Head over there. £5 goes right back into the network, goes back into equipment, so we can keep bringing this top entertainment to you each and every week. Free! Free. Don't forget that. Free. And by the way, we've had so many write-ups in iTunes this week for all the shows. Thank you, guys. Much, much appreciated. Please continue. Tell your friends. Tell your neighbors. Tell your exes. Tell your mistresses. Everybody, tell them to tune in to Bagel Tech Photo.
And don't forget to vote.
Oh, yes. And don't forget to vote. I was getting there. Don't forget to vote.
If you go to our website, bageltechnews.com, there's a blue panel there with all the show logos in. Click on those. It'll take you to a website where you can vote for us in the European Podcast Awards. You don't have to be in Europe to vote for us. Anyone can vote for us. So worldwide, please, please, please vote. And vote as much as you possibly can, as many times as you can. Because when we get to the finals, then we get picked out and I'm determined we're going to win. And if we win, I'm going to buy beer for everybody.
Yes.
Yay. Yes.
Sweet deal. Sweet, sweet deal. Yes, please vote. We would like our free beer, people. Courtesy of you, American. and yeah, you can vote. You don't. It doesn't have to be in Europe. I voted over here. You know, yeah, I'm going to vote for our shows. I like our shows, and we hope you do too. Please do that. I think that pretty much does it for the show then. I think we're pretty much done.
Yeah.
We got through it. We missed Alex this week.
We missed Hopefully Chris Alex as well. He's gone.
When he comes back, just ask him what his ISP is.
Well, he needs to get his ass off 3G. That's the trouble. He sat on 3G at home with a crappy router and a Wi-Fi network, and that's what you get.
That's what happens.
He's got the Oprah effect. Oprah's found out that we've been slagging her off, and he's touchable, whereas I'm over this side of the water. She can't get me. Then again.
That's the show title, The Oprah Effect.
The Oprah Effect. We got it.
The Oprah Exposure.
No, she's going to find out I've called her the size of Hurricane Irene. She's got a lot of money, dude.
Hey, I know. But still, though, we were quite conservative. Category 3, Category 4.
I'll be fine as long as she doesn't offer to, she'll drop the case if I have sex with her.
Yeah, it's time to wrap up the show now.
No okay. question.
Ewan.
Move on.
Yes. Where can we get a hold of you?
Get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter, or you can get me at Bageltit News on Twitter, or you can get me at ewanrankin.co.uk for commercial photography. And you can get Chris Forsman at Ars Technica. You can watch his articles there because he's a fantastic writer for the Ars Technica staff. And you can get him at Forsmac, Foresmac, on Twitter.
Sweet deal. And he did a great impression of Alex today.
We're not going to let him say where he's from now.
No.
Oh, I forgot to change the lower third because we had line 3's played up, so I've had to put him onto the other line, so never mind.
But he's done a great impression today.
He has.
Don't worry, Chris. You uncovered you.
God.
Welcome dude, back. Dude, get a wired connection, huh?
It's not
that. Are you on
3G?
Yeah, right.
Are you on 3G?
Nothing else drops. I've got IRC with Ars Technica. I've got my Instant Messenger. Everything stays connected. It's Skype. Something's wrong with the Skype.
It's Microsoft and Skype, just so you know. Since the two united, they do completely and utterly suck. I hate Skype now, too.
Bastards. Sorry.
We got you covered, Chris. Don't worry about it. Tune into the video and audio edition, and you shall hear how lovely Ewan did your introduction and outro.
Thank you. do we not normally do video?
Well, oh no, we're
is that new?
News video, yeah, we would, but that's a non-starter now. Moving on.
Yeah, moving on. Okay. Moving on. If anybody's bothered at all, you can find me at KyleSwagger.com or on Twitter at KyleSwagger. We will be back next week. We will attempt to somehow, some way, get an Ethernet cable over to Chris Forsman from across the ocean and down to Chicago Airs. and through MacBook Oprah's
Airs don't
room.
Have Ethernet. Sorry.
Too bad. So sad. Somehow we'll get it. We'll talk to Oprah. Oprah can get one. If anybody can do it, Oprah can do it. We'll see you next week. Thanks for tuning in. And we're sorry.
Bandwidth and hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Web hosting for everyone.